Welcome to the Developer's Guide for Windows 10 Preview. I'm Jerry Nixon, developer evangelist here in the United States. This is my compatriot.
And I'm Andy Wigley. I'm developer evangelist out of the UK.
We're talking about all the new candy that you have in your Visual Studio 2015 Preview and Windows 10 Preview SDK. And right now we're going to be talking about the new ways that apps can communicate with each other. Andy, what are we going to cover?
Okay, so we're going to look at, first of all, what we had in 8.1, because it kind of sets the context. And we've got a lot of great new stuff that's come in Windows 10 UAP, so we're going to do a comparison with that. So look at all of the new ways that we've enhanced the app-to-app communication, acting on a lot of feedback we got from developers and from our enterprise customers and people. So we're adding a lot of great stuff that really make it much easier to create apps that will cooperate with each other, provide services to each other, and great ways of creating like a suite of apps that are collaborating and working together.
All right, so we'll walk down memory lane here. Let's see what app-to-app communication was like in Windows 8.1.
Okay, yeah, so two primary techniques here. So there's URI activation and protocol activation, and they're complementary. So the idea here is that the receiving app is installed, and in its manifest, it declares that, okay, I will answer launch requests for a specific URI, a particular protocol.
So in this example, the protocol is sample app
colon. Sample app colon, that's right. So you kind of cook up a your own pretend URI, that sort of thing, okay? Similarly, with file, the receiving app will say, okay, I can handle files with a particular file extension.
Like PDF or something?
Yeah, that's kind of an obvious one, yeah, that's right. So the idea here is that the sender just throws something out there. They launch a URI, because with a URI, it's not only the protocol, which sort of says, I want to send this to an app that knows how to handle sample app colon, but then you also put a little bit of data in the query string as well. So you're sending a limited amount of data from one app to another, which will trigger some kind of action in the other app.
It's sort of sent out into a black hole, though, isn't it? I mean, you send it out, you don't know if it's working or not. The user may not have something installed for that protocol. They are sent to the store, or maybe they just decline going to the store.
Well, this is it. And it was by design, but the idea here is that the user could have a number of different apps that they've installed to handle a particular thing. Or they have a particular preference. They like this PDF reader compared to this other PDF reader. So you've got choice there. So that just allows a kind of loose a decoupling between the sender and the receiver.
Both good and bad, because if you were relying on sending, let's say, to sample app, but I also submitted an app to the store with sample app as a protocol, it doesn't reliably go to the one you're expecting. It could go to mine, which is, totally.
That's right. I mean, if you have got two apps installed on your device, on phone anyway, and coming on Windows, big Windows as well, it will put up a disambiguation dialogue. So it basically asks you, I've got two apps here that know how to handle this. Which one do you want to send it to?
And you as the sender or the invoker, you don't have any control.
No, that's right.
All right, so that's one way.
Yeah, and this was by design. That was by design. And then the other kind of way as well, another kind of decoupled way, is what we call the share contract. So the share contract is, again, this way that it's called a contract because it allows a sender to sort of throw out some content there, a package of data or images and or images, that sort of thing, and then allows the user to decide where that content goes. Yeah. So they can choose to share it with...
Similar problem to protocol activation, shared with whom you don't have any control over
that's
that.
Right. And this is by design. So it allows the user to stay in control. But that doesn't satisfy
That's
everybody.
Windows 8. That's We're Windows 8. In Windows 10. Things are different.
Things are different. So, we had a lot of feedback saying, that's kind of okay. Particularly enterprises.
I wonder who you're impersonating there. That's interesting. It's very precise.
This is what I hear on the street. Yeah, so we've got some new stuff, some of these feature requests. So we've added loads of stuff to our app-to-app communication. You can obviously launch a specific app. So this is where the sender is saying, okay, I want you to launch an app that knows how to handle protocol sample app.
Yeah.
But actually, I want specifically that app, that particular one by this publisher or by this particular name. So,
there's no ambiguous calling. It is specific to only this one.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, that's nice. So I might call out to you to handle all of my fulfillment for my store, and I know it's you, not somebody else who might be hijacking your protocol.
Exactly. And the second kind of new enhancement is being able to send a file token. So this is where you can send a file in your local storage, a big file. You can kind of tokenize it and send that token off to the sender, and they can then get access directly to that file.
And to be clear, you're not sending a file, because that could be very large. Yep. This is just the token that includes all the access ACL that you need in order to access it.
Sure. And we had, we had file associations before in 8.1, and it would send the file out there, but it would actually copy the whole file across. So this is like the file stays with the sender, if you like, and you send a reference, a access token to the other end. So it's
big improvement, especially on low-end devices.
Oh yeah, sure. The third one is launch for results.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, so
To launch the protocol activation.
Yeah, but this is a kind of a two-way thing. So this is the thing. If you wanted to send something to another app, and then they did some processing, and then they wanted to send the results back to you, there was actually no clean way of doing that in 8.1. You had to kind of have back-to-back protocol. So you'd have sample app colon going one way, and then the reverse would be sample app response colon or something. So you kind of
nothing transactional. You couldn't trust that it would work. No. Yeah.
So again, this is another being a big ask that people wanting to, let's just have a clean way. I want to send the stuff and get the result. I need to know, you know, a payments processor, for example. I need to know what happened. Did the payments processing app, did the payment go through? So when the control comes back to the sending app, they want to know, did the user actually buy it or not? You know, so this is the kind of thing.
Makes sense to me.
And the fourth big feature around app-to-app communications is this thing called app services. So app services is the idea that you have a background task. So this is without, the other ones have all been UI-less, UI-based.
Yes.
So you launch another app, and the other app gets launched and shows its UI, and then eventually with launcher results, it calls back and you're transferred back into the UI of the original app. App services is exactly like web services, but on device. We're not going to go into any more detail in this session. There's a lot to talk about. It's a very interesting, very exciting technology, and we're going to cover that another time.
Basically, you get to talk to another app's background task.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it is. So loads of really great stuff. Okay, let's look at each of those and how they work in each of those specific scenarios. First of all, the launch URI async to a specific app. So quite simple. You have to new up a launcher options, create a new instance of a launcher options, and that has a property on it called target application package family name. And that you set to this magic name. What is a package family name?
Well, I mean, a package family name is given to me whenever I submit to the store.
Yep.
Even though I do have a default one that's given as soon as I say file new project. So that allows me to debug it. But if I'm looking for my family name, the store gives me that unique name. And what's great about it coming from the store, it's globally unique.
Yeah, this is right. Because part of that name is like when you associate your app with the store, you've got a developer account. So they know it's uniquely you as that app publisher. So the name that you get back is unique, globally unique. So so you know what app it is because this is its PFN. You then use that name in your launcher options object, and then simply launch URI async, which is exactly the same as we had before. Pass the URI, but you pass the options object with it as well.
Yeah, optional parameter that you
can include. Very easy, and the URI can include your
Speaking of optional parameter, whenever I call launch URI, you can see I can also send a file. And so I can include in those options my family name, like you can see here, but I can also fetch a token for a file, include that in a value set, and just where I said before, it was launch URI, or where you said before, launch URI, pass the URI, comma, then the options, I can also say, comma, payload that I'm sending along as well.
Yep.
And so you can see it's not specific to just a file. This is a whole value set that I get to send across. It could be a pretty large key value dictionary.
Yeah, it's about, I think, 100 kilobytes max size.
Yeah, pretty serious.
Which is pretty serious. Yeah, the value set is a new type that came out with 8.1. So it's just like you say, it's a string object dictionary. So anything that object needs to be serializable into a string format so it can be passed across. But it's a valuable way of passing structured data across from one app to another.
Now, there was this idea of I launch a protocol, and I still don't know if there's anything that can handle it, you know, for the user to use.
Yeah, so this is the thing. So if normally, if you launch URI Async and there is no app installed to actually handle that, so the user hasn't gone ahead and already installed an app that knows how to handle Instapaper or whatever, then the platform itself will just put up a dialogue to the user saying, sorry, you don't have anything installed to handle this. Would you like to go to the store and find an appropriate app? And if you say yes, it'll take you off and display to you a filtered list of apps that have registered to know that can handle that.
So protocol. That's the Windows 8 behavior.
Yeah, and there will still be the behavior now if you don't do something else. So the whole point of this this new API called Query URI Support Async is that the sender can discover programmatically up front and preempt this kind of this dialogue to the user. So it means the sender can actually do its own UI to the user or provide some other way. For example, in an enterprise scenario, you could direct the user to a share or something to install a side-loaded enterprise app, for example.
Oh,
so,
I see.
So you can just preempt all of this. I want to say
it's not a black
store hole,
right?
No.
Where you get to say, hey, don't forget, user, you're going to have to install this before you go any further.
That's right.
Pretty nice.
Yeah, it is pretty nice. So lots of rich support for that. Last one I said, we're not going to go into a lot of details on this one, but this is app services, where you can have, the idea here is that the app is installed on the device. It may have a UI ahead, it may have an interactive UI with it as well, but the key bit, the important bit, is its background task.
So I get to talk directly to the background task.
Yeah.
It can process whatever it needs to in the security context of the other application.
Exactly. And it's very exciting because the background task effectively is long-lived. So it's kind of there, sitting there, available. Once it's invoked, it just sits there, and you can have a chatty exchange going on. So it's awesome because the background task, you can build up, install apps that can do specific things, and it means the client apps don't have to repeat implementing the same behaviors all the time, so they can just call on a barcode scanning service or a cache service for file access to an enterprise, all sorts of things. I mean, loads of scenarios that you can think of.
URI activation is pretty simple. Andy, I think it'd be a lot easier if we just showed him in a demo.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so here we go. We've got a demo here. Very simple universal app. It's got a UI just with a button, not set centrally. And all that the code behind does is it uses launch URI async to a URI, which is W10 Tech Preview. So I haven't got any protocol handlers on the device at the moment. I'm going to do this on the phone. So let's run this and see what happens with no apps installed to handle it. Now, I'm going to hit the button, and actually, nothing at all happens at the moment. Now, normally, you'd expect it to come up with a dialogue saying, do you want to go to the store? And it will take you to the store and give you a list of apps that are already registered in the store, but that's actually not working in these bits at the moment. So that will happen later on. So nothing at all happening at the moment, but I'm now going to install a couple of other apps. So also in this solution, I've got two apps that are essentially identical. One's called First Protocol Handler. The other is called Second Protocol Handler. And in their manifest, they declare down here in the extensions a protocol extension. So they are registering to say, I can handle the W10 Tech Preview URI scheme. And the main screen went, and also, sorry, in the app.xaml.cs, there's some code in here that handles, here we go, onActivated, handles a protocol activation. And if it does, it simply navigates to main page in this example. And on main page in the first one, you just get a little bit of text saying you're in the first WT Tech Preview protocol handler, and I'm sure you won't be surprised to know that in the other one, which is identical, registers for the same protocol, it just says you're in the second W10 Tech Preview protocol handler. So this has the same protocol declaration. So I've got two apps that both handle this protocol. Let's just deploy those guys to the phone as well. Deploy it. That's gone. And the other one, let's deploy that. So that's gone as well. So now we can run our main app. So still the startup project is still our simple little client here. So now we run the main app, hit the button when it loads. And now we get this disambiguation dialogue. So it happens the same, works the same on desktop. So on the desktop, it also allows you to go to the store to choose an app. But yeah, now you've got two, and this is the kind of 8.1 behavior. So I can choose I want the yes, but I do it better one. And we're now in the second W10 Tech Preview Protocol Handler. Now on desktop, it would remember that. And it would always then go to the same one. But on the phone, it's different. On the mobile, it's different. You always get this disambiguation dialogue. But this is by design, you know, so that the user can choose to select whatever. Imagine it was a PDF reader or something like that. They might have two different ones on there. So it's perfectly valid for them to be able to switch between them, which is fine. But you may wish to have a app-to-app communication where you are going to a specific one of those. So that disambiguation dialogue's not going to come up. So let's just implement that. Now, to do that, you need to know the package family name. Let's say we always want the first protocol handler. So I'm just going to add into this, into here. I'm going to put into, just write to the debug window. Just resolve that using system.diagnostics. Debug.writeline. And I'm going to write to here the package family name. The code to do that is windows.applicationModel.package.current. So that gets the current package. And then to get the family name, you go .id .family name. So this will return the family name to you for this app. This is just for debug purposes, because if you submit it to the store, you'll know what the package family name is. But after you submit it to the store, it changes what you have in debug. So we haven't got the store open at the moment. So we want to just find out what the package family name is for this. So let's actually run this directly in the debugger on the phone. So it just goes straight to its main page. But the important thing is, as it loads and runs, we should have in our output window, there is the package family name that it's written to it. So I'm just going to copy that. And now we've got that bit of information. So now we can go and modify our client app. And in the launcher logic, before we launch it, I'm going to new up. A launcher options. So we go var options is equal to a new launcher options. And it doesn't know what that object is. We need to resolve it. So that's a windows.system.launcher options. And in that, I'm going to set the target application package family name is equal to the string. And in that, I'm going to paste in that long string that we got. Quite ugly, because this is just in debug. Once you submit it to the store, you actually get quite a nice, friendly looking name. And then when we launch the launch, instead of just using this generic one, I'm going to actually insert use one of the overrides of that, which is to include that options in the launch. So now when I run this client application, the app will start up, and we'll hit the button, and if all goes well, we should go directly to the first protocol handler. So we bypass that disambiguation dialogue, and you can see how that all works out.
That's a great demo. It really is straightforward to use. I can see a lot of applications and that can really leverage that as well. It's nice that it's secure now.
Nice and simple, yeah. So taking this on a little bit, the next stage, just look a little bit more at launch for results, which is it's kind of the for interactive apps. This is the great, really great technology that we can use. It allows you as an app developer to create an experience that will it could possibly extend across multiple apps. So you can have one app launching another app, could launch another one, and creating integrated experiences. Each of the apps that are in the chain have their own little UI, kind of a little bit of the transaction to handle. And the idea is that they can cooperate with each other, and then finally a result will get passed back to the original caller. So this was the thing where we were talking about that was kind of, you could kind of do it, was a bit of a kludge in 8.1, in that you could have one app would launch another one, and there was no way for the called app to directly respond back to the callee and say, hey, well, yeah, I've done it, and the result was whatever. So you could do it kind of having back-to-back URI activation.
But it was so unreliable. It was a kludge.
Yeah. It was a kludge.
It really was.
Yeah.
This is really the right and proper way.
The right way to do it. So this has been a big ask for people. So you have launch URI for results async. Same thing as we saw before in terms of setting the target application package family name. So you're saying, I want to specifically send this to this other app, specifically that one. But then below the blue lines there, we've actually got the result, how the result is sent back. So we're again using this value set object. And then we have a protocol for results operation you call a report completed. Method and pass a result data.
And do you put a capital A at the end of that?
I don't actually know what that capital A is doing. Ignore the A. You didn't see the A.
I think I understand though. So the client invokes it specifically by family name to make sure it's not another one. And maybe it's something like an authentication piece, right? Or something like that. It does all the work, passes it back to the client.
Yep.
The client then has not only the result, but also can trust the result because it activated the app that it expected.
So a good example of this was actually Facebook Auth. Mm. So we had to do in 8.1, we had there's a protocol for apps to authenticate with Facebook, which is FB Auth colon. So that is the way that the app would invoke Facebook and try and do the protocol piece. But then we had to have the calling app had to register for another protocol, which I don't remember what it is, for Facebook to then call it back. So this was, again, this back-to-back, this mirroring thing.
Right.
But we also had to put some stuff, special stuff into the store to stop any other apps being deployed into the store using FB Auth. Because we couldn't allow anybody else to pretend to be Facebook. It could be some other, we don't want a malicious app that's pretending to
be. Well, that's just not a scalable solution because you can't do that over and over again. No. This you can.
This is the answer.
Yeah, yes. Very elegant, very elegant.
So I'm just going to show you a demo now and we can look at a little bit more about how it works.
Great.
Right. I'm going to walk through this example with you now. This is a solution containing two projects. This one, which is the app that will be launched, and this one, which is the launcher, the one that will be the client, if you like. So this is the main page of that one. It's just a simple simulation of a shopping experience. The actual checkout experience is handled by this. I'm just going to deploy this to my phone. And you'll see here, there it's actually puts that's the package family name. We will need that later on. So that's the package family name for the actual checkout app. Now I'm going to run the shop app, and I've set a breakpoint in it so we can just step through the code that actually makes the call to the other one. So here's my storefront. I'm going to buy a widget today and a sprocket. So let's go and hit checkout. Right, here we are now in the checkout function that's going to handle this. First of all, the URI for the target app. So that target app has got a URI association declared in its package manifest for checkout demo as the URI scheme. And then stepping through this, you set the launcher options. This is where that target package family name of the target app is specified. Then we specify a let's just move this down, specify a transaction ID, and we're going to build a value set, which is the data that we're going to pass to the client. So we serialize to JSON, because a value set's a fairly simple-minded thing. It's a string dictionary, string object dictionary, but everything you put into the object must be serializable. So our object is too our collection is too complicated of the selected items that I've just chosen to buy. So we serialize that into a string, into JSON, and then we put that value into our input data value set and also a transaction ID, which is that GUID. And then this is where we use the new launch URI for results async, where we're specifying that checkout app URI. That was the URI scheme for the target, this guy here, checkout demo. And the option, so we're going to specify that we only launch the particular app with that package family name, and we pass in our value set of input data. And then I'm going to, when we come back from that, if we've got a success, we'll navigate to the receipt page in here. So I'm now just going to let this run, so we'll navigate to the target. This is the page that's in the checkout app. This is the target app. So we've switched to a whole new app. I'm just going to cancel it in here. We're back now in the original app, and we are on the receipt page because we've navigated to that page, but it says correctly that we've payment failed and we cancelled. So we can go back. Now, I'm going to go back, but I'm actually going to cancel this, and then we're going to debug the receiving side of this. So to do that, I need to change how I do this. So we'll go into, this is the checkout thing. This is that make payment page that you saw. You could do if it could show it. It doesn't want to show it. Doesn't matter. We go to properties. Now I've got this do not launch but debug my code checked here. So if you check that and then debug this, which is what I'm going to do now. I'm going to right click it and debug. Start new instance. So now this app is going to, the debugger starts up, but nothing happens because it's waiting to be activated in some way. So in order to activate it, I'm going to run, and I could run up another copy of Visual Studio, but in this case, I'm directly going to run the client app, the shop one. So this time I'm going to buy myself a contraption and a gizmo and then hit checkout. And at this point, because I didn't set any, I didn't set any breakpoints. That's why that nothing happened there. So let's just go back to my to here and set a breakpoint in the logic. Right, and then back to where we were, and let's buy ourselves a contraption, checkout, and now we're going to hit that breakpoint. So now we're going to step through the code on the receiving side, on the launched app. So we get our value set that we've been passed in. We can get the caller, the package family name of the caller. So we can do some, maybe you can whitelist the approved callers. You can do some kind of validation there. You could set up your own thing using certificates. But we've got just simple validation here. And then we dig around in that value set and extract from it the data that we're interested in. It's not the prettiest code, as the comment suggests there. So we get the transaction ID out. We get out the list of items, and we deserialize the JSON into a list of items. So the items now has one item in it, which is that contraption, which is the item that I've chosen to buy in the source app. And then we calculate the price, and that's the logic. We're good. So we can let that run. And now we're in this, so you can now choose the payment cards. All this is being handled by this called app. And then I can choose to make the payment, which is this guy down here. Make the payment. And now we're going to build our response, a new value set, which is going to send back to the client the result of this. So this is the whole new stuff that we never could do in 8.1. We're building another value set, putting some data into it. We're just sending back the last four digits of the card that was used to make that payment. This obviously is a simulation. And then we put an auth code in, and then we call the report completed method. And this is the point at which we will return control to the caller. So let that run. And now we have navigated, and we got back to the caller, and we've navigated to the receipt. This time we've got our payment successful. So there you can see, you got a nice example of the end-to-end data flow between two apps using Launch for Results.
All right. Yep. That seems pretty easy too. I'm glad we have that now in our toolkit.
Yep. And there's one last thing on this topic of our app-to-app communication.
Yeah.
Very short little topic, but another nice kind of feature. Particularly again for enterprises, if you like. So this idea that apps from the same publisher, now we kind of have this concept of a file share almost on devices.
So we always had a folder that was dedicated to the app, but now two apps for the same publisher, they have a higher level folder that they share between them.
That's right.
Absolutely. Lovely.
Yeah, no, this is cool. Very simple and easy to use. So if you want to use the publisher's shared storage folder, you simply have to declare it in your package.apex manifest. It looks like this, extension category windows.publisher cache folder. And inside that, you have to specify one or more subfolder.
If you don't, there's no folder for you. You have to specify a folder.
Yeah, because we cannot read and write files from the root, if you like. So you have to be, there has to be a folder in there. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to write any code to kind of create these things. They are automatically set up when you need them. They're automatically provisioned for you. So just name it, you can use it. And the way you use it?
Simple enough syntax. You can use the get publisher cache folder, and then you pass in the same string. So in this case, we're passing in fonts.
Yep.
But that would be the same as passing in, say, like folder one or whatever name you gave to that subfolder.
And that gives you back. Yeah, and that's right. Sorry, that gives you back a storage folder object. So you just read and write just as if it's in your local storage.
No new API here. It's just a regular storage folder.
Indeed.
Yep.
Okay. If you want to clear it down, there's a clear publisher cache folder async method, or you could just leave it and this folder will be cleared automatically when the last app from that publisher is uninstalled from the device, should that happen. So
fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
They're nice and simple. But
app-to-app communication, we talked about kind of what we did in Windows 8.1, right? Where we had, it was good, right? We could definitely do URI or protocol activation, and we could reach out to another app. But we also saw the limitation of, what if somebody else had used that same protocol? We saw the special case of Facebook Auth, where we could limit that. But that wasn't a scalable solution, but we saw that coming. And then we also have the share contract. The share contract hasn't gone anywhere. We still can use that, and then we still have that same functionality, but we introduced new stuff in Windows 10.
Yeah, so the new stuff was the being able to URI activate to a specific app, to send file tokens, query URI support to find out if actually the user has already installed the relevant target app. And then there's the UI-less option with the app services as well, which we'll talk about some more another time.
A lot of great tools for Visual Studio. Right.
And then the publisher shared storage folder.
So this is Windows 10 preview. All the neat stuff that's coming to you as developers, all the new paradigms, really, that you can start delivering more value from your application to your end user. Visual Studio 2015 preview is what you want to download to start implementing this, playing with it, seeing if you like it, seeing if you love it, then come back, watch another module with us later.